coming to you from the Lydia Media Studios in the heart of Lewiston, Auburn. It's Lydia's Lunch Bunch, LA's afternoon morning show with Mark and Sarah. We're covering news and events in the greater LA area and talking to the people making a difference in our community. Feel free to share your comments, questions, or suggestions via email at podcast@lydiamediallc.com.
And today's show is brought to you by Rupert's Beverage and Redemption. When it comes to beer, wine, and spirits, don't botch it, squatch it. At 5 locations in Lewiston, Auburn, and Oxford. Learn more at rupersbeverage.com, and remember, the party starts at Rupers.
We have the pleasure of being joined in studio today by the founder of Sovereign Wealth Management, Jeffrey Trushon. How are you?
I'm doing very well. How are you?
Excellent. Thanks for joining us this morning.
My pleasure.
Jeff was featured in the summer issue of LA Metro Magazine, which is now available everywhere for free. The title of the piece is called Basics of Bitcoin. It is on page 32, and I shared with Jeff before we started the show that Sarah and I know very little about Bitcoin.
Oh, so that's generous.
And I think I think we're not alone there.
You're definitely not alone.
It's fairly new. I mean, relatively speaking, right? It's been around for about 15 years or so.
Been around for 15 years, yeah. It's fairly new in the mainstream over the last handful of years. That's when I got introduced to it. So yeah. You guys are certainly still early and part of the majority in terms of your understanding and your view on it. So hopefully we can provide a little color and a little bit of education today.
Looking forward to that.
Yeah. Great.
Before we get there, let's take a look at some headlines for Wednesday, July 2nd.
The United States Senate passes Trump's tax and budget legislation. According to Senator Angus King, the bill will cause 60,000 Mainers to lose health insurance, 30,000 to lose food assistance, while adding $3 trillion to the national debt. King said it is, quote, the worst, most regressive, and harmful piece of legislation I've ever seen. The bill now heads for a vote in the House of Representatives.
The Sun Journal reports that the town of Sebattis has hired Raquel Welch Day as its new town manager. Welch Day resigned from the same position in Mexico after serving for 5 years. She served as Emergency Management Agency Director during the flood of 2023 and received the Spirit of America Award for her contributions to the betterment of Mexico.
The city of Lewiston has partnered with the Maine Department of Transportation to address safety concerns through art. One project on Canal Street features art patterns in one lane of the two-lane road to better accommodate pedestrians and bicyclists. A stop sign was also installed at the corner of Canal and Ash Streets, and I personally drove down there today just to see it.
You love it?
I do. Melanie Tarian has been working on the artwork that is on Canal Street, and I have like kind of a mild obsession with bees.
Yeah.
And it's a bee-themed art installation. It's beautiful. It looks like someone poured honey and honeycomb down the street, and there's flowers painted on, and then I think the bees are being added today. So,
oh, super cool.
Yeah, and the pattern, the traffic pattern's a little bit different. They've installed barriers for the bicyclists.
Nice.
So it's a lot safer. It's very
right.
Cool. Yeah, it's looking really good. Lewiston's making some great changes.
Well done,
yeah.
City of Lewiston.
Indeed.
The City of Auburn is seeking classic car owners to participate in its second annual car show during the Blues, Brews, and Cruise show as part of the Lewiston-Auburn Balloon Festival. Participation is free, and more information can be found at auburnblues.com.
You want to talk about the weather?
I sure do.
Rain or shine, it's all okay. Grab your uke and start the day. You don't need perfect skies above. Hey, just a song and a little love. Just wish I could have found that note a little sooner.
You're the only one that notices.
I know. Well, it's cloudy today, although you wouldn't think so right now. The sun's shining. We're going to have a high of 84 and a low of 68. A mixture of sun and clouds tomorrow with a chance of evening showers, and we'll have a high of 83 and a low of 64. And it looks like, for once, a beautiful 4th of July on Friday with plenty of sunshine and highs in the mid-70s. Mwah! Chef's kiss perfect.
That sounds awesome.
4th of July. Love it.
Taking the kids to the fireworks, Jeff?
Yeah, we'll be out there, yeah.
Right,
yeah, going to get out and try to enjoy it. We got some sparklers, so they're pretty excited for
awesome.
Sure.
Awesome.
Fun, yeah. Yes.
In sports, the Red Sox and Reds game was suspended in the third inning last night due to rain, torrential downpours.
It rained hard.
At Fenway Park. The game will resume this afternoon at 2:30 with the Sox leading 2-1. Tonight's regularly scheduled game will begin at 7.
I was out for a swim when that happened.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You know, it's like rain from above and rain from below. It was cool. I don't want to read this story.
Okay. Do you want me to do it?
I don't want us to have to say it at all.
Okay.
The Florida Panthers signed former Bruins captain Brad Marchand to a 6-year deal.
Oof.
So there goes my hopes and dreams of him coming back.
I know. Everybody thought he was going to go
really
to Florida
did.
To help him through the playoffs, which, yep. you know, he kind of did.
He did.
If you
yeah.
paid attention.
Yep, he totally did.
And then he'd come back to Boston. But that's what happens when an organization realizes how much a player means to them.
They didn't know what they had.
The Panthers gave him a 6-year deal. And Brad Marchand, by the way, is 37 years old.
Crazy.
That
so
is quite,
he's gonna
a,
be
quite
playing.
A commitment.
Yeah. Wow. Wow. Wow.
That is your news, weather, and sports. And right now it's time for the podcast segment that is sweeping the Twin Cities. It's time for famous people birthdays.
They're famous. It's their birthdays. It's famous people birthdays. It's famous people birthdays.
Let's take a look at FPBs for July the 2nd, shall we?
Yeah.
All right. We're going to start off with Margot Robbie.
Aww.
35 years old today.
I love her.
I saw her in I, Tonya.
Oh, gosh.
I think anyone
That's
my
the
age
one you saw.
Would remember the Tonya Harding, Nancy Kerrigan fiasco.
Why?
Yeah. And Margot played Tonya Harding, and she did a fantastic job.
She did a really good job.
Yeah.
Yeah.
She was in The Wolf of Wall Street.
Yep, she was Barbie.
That's right, she was Barbie.
She was like the perfect Barbie, absolutely.
Lindsay Lohan.
Oh, wow.
39 years old today. She was in Freaky Friday with, I think, Jamie Lee Curtis?
Yeah.
Am I remembering that correctly?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
All right. What else has she done?
She was in the Parent Trap, the remake of The Parent Trap.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Like when she was very little.
All right.
Yeah, and then she did like a MTV show for a while.
Oh, she was in Mean Girls too, right?
Yes.
2004.
Possibly her greatest role.
All right.
How did we forget that?
There we go. Buried the lead.
We totally did. Yeah, she was so good in that.
Singer Michelle Branch, 42 years old today.
Oh, yeah.
Her collaboration with Carlos Santana, Game of Love, from 2002 is one of my, I'd say one of my top 20 songs.
Yeah, you love that one.
It is so good.
Yeah.
Larry David from Curb Your Enthusiasm and Seinfeld is 78 years old today. He is a comedy legend.
Pretty funny guy.
Yeah, I would say.
Pretty funny guy.
Yeah, great writer. Absolutely. And rounding out FPBs for July the 2nd is Polly Holiday, who is 88 years old today. Anyone who ever saw the sitcom Alice will remember her as Flo.
Flo, kiss my grits.
There you go. Her famous catchphrase, kiss my grits.
Mel. She always used to tell Mel to kiss her grits.
That's right.
I had no idea as a child what grits were, but I knew what that meant.
And I know now, as an adult, that you could never remake Alice today.
No.
Not even close.
No.
It was, we had some great sitcoms back in the day. But happy birthday to Polly Holiday. Mm-hmm. Those are your FPBs. Now it's time for some OTDs.
It happened on this day. It happened on this day. It happened on this day.
Wow.
Jeff, how do you feel about agreeing to put the headphones on?
No, it's great. I'm so glad I have the headphones
on. Okay, good.
No, these custom cuts are phenomenal. So.
Sometimes guests will take them off halfway through the jingle.
Oh, no, I'm committed. No,
okay, good.
I'm in for the long haul.
He's in it to win it.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. So here's our OTDs. 22 years ago in 2003, Terminator 3 Rise of the Machines was released.
I can't remember what happened in Terminator 3.
If I'm honest with you, I never saw that one.
Okay. Jeff, anything?
No, it's just crazy to me that was Terminator 3, so it kind of just shows you how old you are. Like, when
22.
Did Terminator 2 and the original Terminator come out? I mean, that's,
that's
showing some age there.
Yep. Yeah. 22 years.
The 90s.
The 90s, yeah. There you
80s
go.
And 90s, right?
80s and 90s. Yeah.
Well, we all maybe remember Men in Black 28 years ago in 1997. That was when that movie first premiered.
That's one of your favorites, isn't it?
It is one of my favorites. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, with Vincent D'Onofrio.
I love him. I love him. 28 years ago in 1997, legendary Hollywood actor Jimmy Stewart died in Beverly Hills, California at the age of 89.
Aww.
I remember that. Do you remember who Jimmy Stewart is?
Wasn't he the one in... in the Christmas movie?
Yeah, It's a Wonderful Life.
That one.
Jimmy Stewart.
Yeah. This may shock you, Sarah,
have
but
you
I've,
seen it?
I've never seen
oh.
it.
Oh, man. Mark doesn't see good movies, just in case you
Well,
didn't
in
know.
His defense, I just saw it like for the first time 3 years ago. It's one of my dad's favorite movies, actually.
Really?
And it is worth the wait. It's phenomenal.
So good.
It's
all
phenomenal.
Right.
I'll
it's
have
a
to,
really
like,
good movie.
It's really
and
good.
It's not because I don't want to see them. It just never happened.
Yeah,
I've never seen The Godfather. And I dig gangster movies, you know?
Yeah.
I've never seen it for some reason. I don't know.
It's because you're
weird. I like bad movies.
Okay.
I like movies that are made with a $10,000 budget and a dream.
Yeah, just like to kind of set yourself up for disappointment a little bit, maybe.
Right.
Yeah.
A lot of latex and rubber masks in Mark's movies.
The worse it is, the better.
Yeah. There you go.
34 years ago in 1991, Alice Cooper released his solo album, Hey Stupid.
All right.
I did that one just for you.
Thank you. I saw Alice in concert twice.
Ooh.
Once with Rob Zombie and once as he headlined in Portland, and it was an amazing show.
Wow.
Yeah.
Very
cool. Quite a performer, very theatrical, just awesome.
Speaking of performers, 34 years ago in 1991, Axl Rose caused a riot during a Guns N' Roses concert outside of St. Louis when he jumped off the stage and attacked a fan who was videotaping the show.
How dare they?
Oh, classy, Axl. Yep.
Well, that was 91, so it had to be very noticeable.
It must
you had
been.
To have one of those huge camcorders.
How about this one? 45 years ago in 1980, one of Mark's favorite movies, Airplane, was released.
So good.
You like that one.
Like, I can't think of a funnier movie than the original Airplane.
It's pretty just, funny.
Like, as far as jokes per minute, just incredible.
88 years ago in 1937, aviator Amelia Earhart and her navigator Fred Noonan disappeared over the Pacific Ocean while attempting to make the first round-the-world flight at the equator. I love her, too. When she got married, she told her husband that from time to time, she might need to go away. That was like part of her wedding vows. She was like, I'm going to need to leave because even the prettiest cage is not for me.
Yeah,
like, that's a lady after my own heart.
That's why Sarah keeps a paddleboard on top of her car.
She's going to paddle away at any moment. You never know.
Get out of Dodge here.
Oh, let's see. And how about this one? In 249 years ago in 1776, the Continental Congress passed a resolution, quote, these United Colonies are and of right ought to be free and independent states. The final draft of this Declaration of Independence was adopted 2 days later on July 4th.
All right.
Beautiful. We were free peoples.
Love it.
What comes next?
Do we want to wait and see?
Who knows?
Those are your FPBs and OTDs for July the 2nd.
Whether you want a sit-down meal or a grab-and-go, Pat's Pizza in Auburn offers delicious sandwiches, pasta, salads, and pizza at family-friendly prices. Pat's Pizza, serving the L.A. area since 1985. Open daily from 11 a.m. to 9 p.m. at 85 Center Street in Auburn. Online at patsauburn.com.
Now we shift focus fully to our guest in studio, founder of Sovereign Wealth Management, Jeff Trushon. And Jeff, I don't know where to start with Bitcoin.
What is Bitcoin?
I'm hoping you can make sense of, obviously, that's why you're here, but like cryptocurrencies and blockchains and Bitcoins, where do we start? What's it all about?
Yeah, so I tend to lean, as you can probably tell by the article, more towards the Bitcoin side of crypto. I'm not a huge believer in the broader cryptocurrency space, quote unquote. I think a lot of the different options that are out there are really kind of chasing Bitcoin. You know, Bitcoin has been the leader in the digital asset space since its inception in 2009. You know, it's believe it or not, it's the best performing asset in the market since 2009, really by a factor. So, you know, you have the NASDAQ, which has performed very well, you know, close to 20% a year since 2009. But Bitcoin has really performed at a tune of about 100% a year since 2009. So not only is it the most misunderstood asset in the markets, right? Very few people have an understanding of what it is. It's also the best performing asset in the market since 2009. So it's a really unique kind of situation that's been unfolding. But at the end of the day, Bitcoin, I view, is really a store of value. So the beauty of Bitcoin is that there will never be more than 21 million Bitcoin. So that's kind of one of the major value propositions, is that it is absolutely finite and scarce. Every other asset in the world, if you think about it, you can create more of, right? So gold, for instance, you can dig more gold out of the ground as the price of gold goes up. And especially as technology gets better, we can dig more gold out of the ground more efficiently over time, right? So you can inflate the supply of gold. Real estate, we've witnessed over the last 5 years post-COVID. I mean, if there's demand for real estate, you can build more homes to meet the demand and saturate the market, right? Mm-hmm. Same thing with stocks, same thing with bonds. And as we know, and as you discussed in the intro with the BBB bill that's being passed, that's likely to add $3 trillion to the debt, they can absolutely print money, right? We know that for sure. Mm-hmm. So the beauty of Bitcoin is for the first time in human history, we have an asset that you can store your wealth in that nobody can take from you and nobody can create more of. And that in and of itself is insanely powerful when you look at, you know, the problems with inflation, the problems with our growing debt. You know, pre-COVID in 2019, our national debt was $22 trillion. $22 trillion at the end of 2019. Today, $37 trillion. So our national debt has exploded by greater than 50% in 5 years. So that's, I think, a good intro. For me, really, COVID changed everything for me in my understanding of how money really worked and how the debt system that we live in today really worked. And that started me on a journey of really understanding money. You know, it's funny, I've been in the financial services business since 2016, but it really took COVID for me to understand how the money worked. And I went back and studied all the way to, you know, 1971 when we went off the gold standard. And on that journey, I was reintroduced to Bitcoin. And at that point, I was ready to really see it for what it was. And, you know, it's changed my life, it's changed my practice, and it's changing my clients' lives.
Why was Bitcoin created, and why is there a finite supply?
Yeah, it's a great question. So Bitcoin was created by a pseudonym by the name of Satoshi Nakamoto. So nobody knows who Satoshi Nakamoto is. It was created in 2009 as a direct result of the financial crisis. So the financial crisis in 2008, that's when we basically started quantitative easing and allowed the Fed to start buying mortgage-backed securities and different assets on their balance sheet and inject liquidity into the system. And arguably, Satoshi Nakamoto saw this coming. Satoshi Nakamoto said, you know, and this had been building over time, but he saw this coming. And when the Fed stepped in and bailed out the banks and bailed out the insurance companies and used taxpayer dollars to do that, right? You know, they privatized the gains and socialized the losses, right? We all paid for that, right? Because they have to introduce more money into the system. So in 2008, during the financial crisis, they printed $900 billion to bail out the global economy in that period. Printed it, right? And the base case of this is, listen, we have a finite amount of time and energy on this planet, right? And we spend 40 hours a week trading that time and energy for a currency unit that some unelected official can press a button and print more of out of thin air. No man should work for what another man can print. Okay? So Satoshi saw this, right? So he created this system and said, I'm going to release this new monetary network that's based on the internet that is absolutely fixed in supply. So it's really the antithesis to the existing system that we're living in, where they can create more money without anybody's approval or anybody's vote with a press of a button, whereas Satoshi created this network that was internet-based, not controlled by any one individual, but absolutely fixed and scarce in supply. So I know in 10 years, 20 years, 50 years, 100 years, exactly how much Bitcoin will be in existence out of that 21 million. But I can't tell you in 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, how much a dollar is going to buy you, what the national debt's going to be, what the average home price is going to be. But I can assure you it's going to be higher than where it is today.
Right.
So Bitcoin was created as a digital store of value. I think it has the potential to be, you know, the money of the future. But I think we're likely a ways away from that.
Does the value of Bitcoin fluctuate day to day like the stock market?
100%. Yeah. So that's one of the knocks on Bitcoin for people that don't understand it, and myself as well, is Bitcoin is the most volatile asset in the market. And volatility, think of like a waterfall, right? A waterfall is insanely volatile, right? There's a lot of energy that's moving through that waterfall. And it's the same thing with Bitcoin. And because it's a finite, scarce asset, it trades really uniquely. So, you know, the volatility of Bitcoin, you'll see Bitcoin move, you know, 1, 5, 10% in a single day, which really scares a lot of people. You know, traditionally, even before COVID, I mean, I, as a financial advisor, I used to think volatility equals risk. If volatility, if something is volatile, it means it's inherently risky, right? But, you know, I came to the conclusion in studying Bitcoin that I actually believe, and, you know, this is my personal belief, that Bitcoin is the least risky asset in the market, based on its fundamental characteristics. Now, it's the most volatile because of the fact that it's, you know, finite, it's, you know, 21 million, it trades 24/7, so Bitcoin does not sleep, right? So the stock market, right, trades Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 4, right? Your banks are open from, 9:30 to 4:30 Monday through Friday, right? Can't get your money on the weekends. Can't get your money at 11 o'clock on a, Friday night if you need it. But Bitcoin is open 24/7 global liquid all across the world. So the best way to manage volatility, right, is to manage your position size. Right. So maybe you have a smaller allocation within your portfolio because you know that it's going to be volatile and maybe you can't stomach the volatility. And that's kind of how you ease your way into the asset.
In the article in LA Metro Magazine, you say a lot of people say they won't invest in Bitcoin because they can't touch it. Mm. And my first thought was, well, that makes sense. If I can't touch it, why would I invest in it? As I check my bank balance on my phone.
Right. Is it,
right?
I haven't had a 100%. Paper check in over a decade.
100%.
Like, I mean, from my employer. So it's pretend, right?
Yeah, 100%. And for me, I think Bitcoin is so incredibly unique in that everybody, myself included, starts as a denier, right? Yeah. Everybody starts as a denier to Bitcoin. You're not curious. You're not open-minded to it. Generally, and this is a blanket statement, but I believe it to be true, most people start as a denier. If you were to go to talk somebody, randomly at the grocery store or anywhere, around and you ask them about Bitcoin, typically you're going to receive a negative response, right? Which is really unique. So I think people search for ways to justify their negative belief on it, whether it's, it's a Ponzi scheme or I can't touch it, so it's not real, or what happens if the internet goes out. I mean, they make up all these scenarios, right? It really takes time to kind of understand the asset. And I genuinely believe, you need, 10 to 15 hours of study to understand what this thing is and why it's important. But at the end of the day, that's what technology does. Technology dematerializes the physical object, right? If you look back 30 years ago, I mean, we live in an entirely different world today from a technology standpoint, than we did then. And I view Bitcoin as a digital store of value. I think, it's fair to kind of compare, in some ways, Bitcoin to gold. It's a decentralized, commodity-based asset. Gold is just physical, right? You can grab it, you can touch it. Bitcoin is digital. And when you think about it, because Bitcoin trades 24/7 across the globe, the fact that it's not physical is very valuable. And that's a feature and not a bug of the asset, because that means you can carry it across the border. You can get on an airplane and you can go anywhere you want with all your wealth stored in your head, right? You can't do that with a piece of property. You can't do that with a stock portfolio. You can't do that with, 10 ounces of gold. You can't, cross a border or fly through an airport. So, I think the fact that it's digital is absolutely a massive advantage to Bitcoin because of where we're headed. Technology is very exponential in terms of its adoption and its growth. And I do not see that slowing down whatsoever. You look at AI, you look at ChatGPT, you look at all these different dynamics that are coming into play, how interconnected the globe is and how we rely on the internet to transact value and information. And Bitcoin is just an integral part of that, current environment and the future that we're trending towards, mm-hmm. I believe.
So if I were to send you money right now, mm-hmm. I would have to use the bank app on my phone mm-hmm. or Venmo, which also involves a bank.
Yep.
With Bitcoin, the bank is out of the picture, correct?
Yeah, that's a really beautiful dynamic. So Bitcoin is a peer-to-peer transaction network. So if you have a cell phone and an internet connection, you can download a wallet on your Apple or Android phone, you can purchase Bitcoin, and you can send Bitcoin anywhere in the world, and it settles instantaneously for fractions of a cost with no third party being involved in the transaction, right? So you think about people that are sending money to, families in Africa or different parts of the country where they're a little more impoverished or maybe a lot more impoverished. And, you've got, Western Union out there that's, collecting massive fees on these transactions. Mm-hmm. Then you got to convert the currency from dollars to euros or yen or yuan or, Canadian dollars, whatever it may be. Whereas with Bitcoin, you have this global money that no government can issue more of. Nobody can censor you in terms of the transaction. So you can use it to pay for things. You can use it to transact value across the globe. Mm-hmm. And it settles instantaneously. So you think about how archaic it is to write a check, right? You write a check, you got to mail it, they got to bring it to the bank, right? So that alone takes 7 days. And then they cash the check, and depending on the size of the check, they may not even give you the funds for another week. right? And the bank is only open 9:30 to 4,
right?
How convenient, right? To get your own money, right. Of which they don't have because they fractional reserve lend, so banks really only have 10% of the deposits of the assets that they have, which is why a lot of banks went out of business in 2023 with the Silvergate and Silicon Valley Bank and everything that unfolded, and that's a conversation for another day. I mean, I've studied this asset nonstop since it's actually 4 years this month. I started studying it in July of 2021 as a result of COVID. And I have become so immersed in this asset, and not only because of understanding Bitcoin, but understanding money and the history of money and where things have gone and what's happened to lead us to this point and where I believe we're going in the future. So yeah. I'll spend the rest of my life educating people about Bitcoin because I believe it's that important for them and themselves, especially with how early we are. I mean, I know people say, oh, Bitcoin's $100,000. It's been around for 15 years. You're not early. And I would challenge and push back on that. Bitcoin is growing at a rate faster than the internet. 15 years in globally. And, you know, in terms of the amount of wealth globally that's stored in Bitcoin, only 0.2% of all the wealth in the world is stored in Bitcoin. 99.8% of all the wealth that exists in the world today is stored in other assets that are not Bitcoin. So when you understand where we're going, you understand the problems with the money and the debt, you understand, you know, the technological aspects of the future. I mean, you know, I don't know how you can't look at this thing and again, the best performing asset in the world for the last 16 years. I mean, that's not a fluke. I mean, that's by design. And the fact that nobody understands it and everybody is a denier, right? As an investor, I mean, what more do you want, right? You want nobody to believe and everybody to deny what you believe to be true based on research. And if you are true, like, that's asymmetry, and that's where life-changing, you know, returns can take place. I mean, you look at Apple and Amazon and how disruptive they were in the commerce business and in the communications business, and now they're, you know, the two of the five biggest companies in the entire world. So I think it's going to take time. It's going to take, you know, efforts like this to educate people on why it's important, but I believe there's no other option. I mean, I don't know how we get out from $37 trillion of debt. You know, they're raising the debt ceiling with this BBB bill. You know, they suspended the debt ceiling under Biden. So, I mean, it doesn't matter red or blue. Like, this is a system problem that is entrenched globally. Mm. And, you know, I don't, you know, foresee it changing, unfortunately.
Mm. How does the federal government view Bitcoin? Mm. Because we all know they like to keep an eye on our transactions.
Yeah. Well, so with Bitcoin, it's actually, people say like, well, Bitcoin is used for money laundering or drug trafficking. And Bitcoin is you know, there's Bitcoin the asset, which is the 21 million. And then there's Bitcoin the network, which is a blockchain underneath it. So you talked about blockchain. And all blockchain is a ledger. So it just shows, you know, party A transacted with party B, sent them X amount of Bitcoin, and then boom, it's stamped into the ledger. And then party B sends it to party C and so on and so forth. So you can see every single transaction that's ever occurred on the Bitcoin network dating back to 2009. It's fully transparent. It's the most transparent monetary system that we've ever had. You can't do that with dollars. I don't know how they're transacting dollars behind the scenes or how they're transacting gold. There's no trail to it, right? So, you know, I think the government is, I think they understand Bitcoin, and I think they do understand that much like the internet or a virus, there is no stopping it. You really can't stop it. I believe, you know, you don't ban Bitcoin, you ban yourself from Bitcoin. And then, you know, if you get deeper into it, I mean, my fundamental belief is that they can never stop printing money, okay? Mm-hmm. Like, that is my core. When I went down the history books and started, you know, really dove into this journey, my fundamental core thesis 4 years ago that has played out to arguably close to perfection 4 years later is that they cannot stop printing money. The system that we live in, this debt-based system, cannot survive without perpetual monetary debasement. Mm-hmm. Right. So when you understand that, you know, then you can start to look for solutions and different things to protect yourself. And I believe, you know, that Bitcoin is the, you know, the you know, I believe stocks will do well. I believe real estate will continue to do well because at the end of the day, they have to continue to debase the currency to keep the system pushing forward. So if that's the case, then you want to hold scarce, desirable assets. And in my opinion, there's nothing more scarce or globally desirable, right, than Bitcoin. You know, real estate, think about it. You got property taxes, you got insurance costs, you got maintenance costs. Your real estate is not divisible. It's not liquid. It's not portable. You can't sell a fraction of a property or buy a fraction of a property, right? Your real estate in California and Florida can be burned down or flooded, right? Mm-hmm. You know, you don't have those problems with Bitcoin. You can create more real estate. you know. So it's going to take time, I think, to educate people. But I believe it's something that's set in motion. And you know, I personally think it's one of those, you know, once you hit a escape velocity, like, there's no coming back. And Bitcoin is now a $2 trillion asset. It's one of the top 10 biggest assets in the entire world. You look at the trends, and I just don't see that changing.
Yeah. How does one acquire Bitcoin?
Yeah.
Yeah, so there's a couple different ways you can do it. So the quote-unquote cypherpunk way, and in my opinion, the best way to go about it, but you need to be a little bit technologically savvy, is to own physical Bitcoin on a cold storage wallet, is what it's called. So basically, you know, you buy Bitcoin. Again, there's a lot of layers here, right? But basically, you purchase Bitcoin on a cryptocurrency exchange, right? And then you have the ability to transfer that Bitcoin from the exchange to an address of a wallet, right? And what that wallet does is it generates 12 words or 24 words that basically becomes your what's called a seed phrase or a password to access your Bitcoin. So if you can memorize 12 or 24 words, right? You can go anywhere in the world and have all your wealth stored in your head, right? It's an incredible thought process when you understand the implications of this looking forward. But a lot of people struggle with that, right? A lot of people maybe aren't technologically savvy. I mean, the baby boomers really have a majority of the money in the world today, and they're maybe not the most technologically savvy group out there, right? So in January of 2024, the SEC approved spot Bitcoin ETFs. And an ETF is an exchange-traded fund that basically tracks the price of an asset, right? So you can buy an S&P 500 ETF that tracks the price of the S&P. You can buy a gold ETF that tracks the price of gold. Or you can buy a Bitcoin ETF, which allows you to basically, you know, quote-unquote, own Bitcoin through a third-party custodian, right? So you can buy a Fidelity Bitcoin ETF, a BlackRock Bitcoin ETF, and you can incorporate Bitcoin into your portfolios in a more seamless way. You just have to pay a small fee to the ETF issuers to, you know, hold their position. But the problem with that, in my opinion, is you don't own the Bitcoin. The BlackRock owns the Bitcoin. Fidelity owns the Bitcoin. You just have a claim on it. Now, it's a great way to get exposure, but and I don't foresee this happening, but if you recall FTX and Sam Bankman-Fried back in 2022 with the Tom Brady commercials on the Super Bowl, you know, with the fire gun, right? With a lot of people trusted FTX to hold their Bitcoin, and you know, they misappropriated those funds, and when push came to shove and people wanted their Bitcoin, FTX didn't have it. So, you know, I named my firm Sovereign Wealth Management because if you hold Bitcoin, you are entirely sovereign. If you hold Bitcoin in a cold storage wallet, you are not reliant on any third individual to hold or transact the Bitcoin. Because you own Bitcoin, you are not dependent on, you know, the decisions of a Fed or a government in terms of how much money they're going to print. Like, you are completely sovereign and immune to the decisions of all the people around you, which are very detrimental when you look at, you know, purchasing power and the value of a dollar over time.
There was a story that came out in 2021 about a man from San Francisco who lost $220 million because he forgot his Bitcoin password.
Yes.
Oh, no. I do remember that.
Yes.
How does that happen?
Well, so Bitcoin went from a $0 asset in 2009, okay? $0, no value, right? To 15 years later being one of the top seven largest assets in the world. So, you know, Bitcoin got its run in what's known as the Silk Road back in the early 2010s, which was kind of like a black market, like a dark market that people would use Bitcoin as the primary currency, right? So they would transact and they would use Bitcoin to, you know, do what they did on this black web. And then the government shut down the Silk Road, and they, you know, arrested the founder of the exchange, but they couldn't stop Bitcoin. Right, so they put Ross Ulbricht in jail, who was pardoned by Trump, among other pardons. Thank God, he was served with two life sentences for creating a website. First time offender, two life sentences. Right, wow. So that shows, like, hey, if you don't use the U.S. dollar, like, here's what's going to happen to you, arguably. Mm. Right, but when you think about it, like, you know, Bitcoin was trading for, you know, 10 cents, 20 cents, 50 cents, you know, $1, $2, $5, $10. Like, people didn't really understand the value of it at that time. So maybe they had Bitcoin on a wallet that they, you know, a computer that they threw away, or maybe they had a passphrase that they had written down and just forgot about and didn't really think much of it because Bitcoin was, you know, people didn't really think long term that it could reach the value that it's at today. So, and the beauty of that is that every Bitcoin that's lost makes your Bitcoin more valuable.
Oh, man.
Right? So if there's only 21 million Bitcoin that there will ever be in existence, right, it is estimated right now that 3 to 4 million Bitcoin are lost forever, will never be found because those passwords are gone.
Is that where the term mining comes in?
No. So mining is a different dynamic. So this is how you get to the 21 million, right? So every 4 years, on average, Bitcoin has what's called a halving. Okay, so from 2009 to 2012, when Bitcoin was created until 2012, every 10 minutes, a certain amount of Bitcoin is released to the market, predictably forever. So from 2009 to 2012, every 10 minutes, 50 Bitcoin were released to the market via the miners. So miners are basically just very, you know, powerful computers that are working to solve a math problem. To be the one miner across the globe, the one computer that puts a stamp of approval on a block of transactions. So if we're transacting, right, across the globe, and Bitcoin is a ledger, so every 10 minutes, that block fills up of transactions, right? And then a miner has to go in, and on average, every 10 minutes, it takes about 10 minutes to solve that math problem. And one miner across the globe, every 10 minutes, is going to be the one that puts the stamp of approval on those transactions, and their reward is Bitcoin, right? So they would get 50 Bitcoin every 10 minutes if they're the one that puts that stamp of approval and says, you know, all these transactions are valid. And what happens is every 4 years, that reward gets cut in half. So from 2009 to 2012, it was 50 Bitcoin every 10 minutes. From 2012 to 2016, it drops to 25 Bitcoin every 10 minutes. 16 to 20, 12.5. 20 to 24, 6.25. 24, where we are today, to 28, 3.125 Bitcoin. So in a world that is entirely unpredictable, Russia, Ukraine, Iran, Israel, Trump, Biden, left, right, this, up, down, like, you know, debt, no debt, like, you know, in a world that is entirely unpredictable, Bitcoin is absolutely predictable in terms of its issuance schedule. Right, I know exactly that in 2028, every 10 minutes, it's going to go from 3.125 to 1.675 or whatever the number is. Right, so that's how you get to the 21 million hard cap. But yeah, I mean, it's estimated that 3 to 4 million are lost forever. The miners are really integral in terms of, you know, compute power behind the Bitcoin network. I mean, there's more computing power supporting Bitcoin right now than computing power that drives our U.S. Navy.
Wow.
So Bitcoin is the biggest computer system in the world. It's incredible, in my opinion, the opportunity here for those that are willing to think critically, to be open-minded and to study and to take time to learn about why this is important. Because it is my belief that the national debt today is $37 trillion, right? We're running wartime deficits. We're spending $2 trillion more as a country today than we're bringing in from tax receipts. In a booming economy with the stock market at all-time highs and unemployment at 4%, we still can't make money. They cannot stop printing money, right? So if you don't own assets, if you don't own stocks, if you don't own real estate, if you don't own gold, if you don't own Bitcoin, right? If you're living paycheck to paycheck and you're reliant on your employer, right? Life is going to get harder. That's been the case for 20 years. That's not going to change. And if anything, unfortunately, I think it's only going to increase. Right. And I don't say that to be pessimistic about the future. I'm incredibly optimistic and hopeful about the future, but it's because of this technology. If you don't have Bitcoin, right, like, what does that look like 30 years in the future when we're $100 trillion in debt? Right. And you're paying so much. We're paying more in interest today on the national debt than we're spending on our military. Just in interest on the national debt. We work for money. Right. We trade our finite time and energy for a currency unit that an unelected official globally can press a button and print out of thin air. So when they print money, they are robbing us of our time and our energy, because we trade our time and our energy for that currency, and they devalue the currency at our expense. You can't do that with Bitcoin.
It's amazing.
It is the most misunderstood. It is so pro freedom. Like, it's so funny because, you know, everybody needs Bitcoin. It's the one thing that everybody needs, but everybody's afraid of it. Everybody hates it. You talk to somebody about Bitcoin, like, Ponzi scheme. I'm not touching that. Ponzi scheme? We're $37 trillion in debt. We keep taking out new credit cards to pay off our old credit cards. You want to talk about Ponzi scheme, right? Like, you know, and you think, like, I've got a 4.5-year-old and a 2.5-year-old. You know, like, what's the future going to, like, when COVID happened and we were pregnant with our first child, I got insanely depressed when I finally understood that the money's not real. Because I was like, what's the off-ramp? You know, what's the world going to look like for my daughter in 20 years? How much is a house going to cost? You know, the American dream is gone.
Yeah.
So this is, like, your lifeboat, in my opinion. And you know, 0.2% of all wealth is stored in Bitcoin. 0.2. And in my opinion, Bitcoin is a better store of value long term. Now, the volatility will chew you up if you trade this thing, but you're not trading it. There's a finite amount. And in my opinion, it's all about acquiring, right? How much of the network can I own, right? Mm-hmm. If you have a long time horizon, which is 5 to 10 years, like, who cares what it does in the short term, right? And if you're buying, you want the volatility because that gives you the opportunity to accumulate more at a better price, yeah. right? Yeah. This is so good for humanity. It's so good for humanity because it is a level playing field for everybody. You can store your wealth here and nobody can change the rules on you. I mean, it's in my opinion, Bitcoin demonetizes war. Bitcoin will create a renaissance in the future because there's no stopping it. There's no stopping it.
What's the minimum investment someone like Sarah and I could make?
$1.
Really?
Yeah. And that's the thing. A lot of people think like, well, like $100,000. I can't afford a whole Bitcoin. Like, are you kidding me? Right? But one Bitcoin contains 100 million Satoshis. Okay? So like $1 contains 100 pennies, right? One Bitcoin contains 100 million, you know, micro units, right? So you can buy $1 of Bitcoin. You can buy $30 worth of Bitcoin. You can buy $75 worth of Bitcoin. And yeah, you know, it may not have the life-changing gains that we saw, right, from $0 to $100,000 a coin over the next 16 years or the last 16 years. But in my opinion, like, nothing will outperform, you know, this asset over a long time frame in terms of major asset classes. So you can buy $1, you can buy $5, you can buy $100,000, you can buy any amount you want. And when you buy that, you own it. You own it. Like, if you can memorize 12 or 24 words, right? And that would be a dire scenario for you to have to actually memorize them, like if you got to leave, right? But if you can, think about it. If you can own 12, if you can memorize 12 or 24 words, nobody can take that from you. So Bitcoin, aside from your thoughts, is the only thing in the world that you can actually own. If you don't pay your property taxes for 12 months, you can have your house paid off, but you don't own it. If you have a car in the front, right, you don't pay the registration or you leave it unlocked, somebody can take it from you, mm-hmm. right? If you have gold buried in the backyard, right? Bitcoin is the only thing in the world that you can own. It's mind-blowing, right? But again, it takes time to get there. Like, it, you know, I first discovered Bitcoin in 2017. Went from $1,000 to $20,000 that summer. I said, this is a scam. It's a Ponzi scheme. I'm not touching it. People are going to lose all their money, right? I was vindicated in 2018 when Bitcoin had one of its major crashes. And in 2020, I had to do something that's very hard for a lot of people to do, and I had to admit that I was wrong. And I had to you know, change my mind. And that changed everything for me. It's in the process of, you know, changing my clients' lives and you know, their kids and their grandkids' lives. And I don't expect that to stop. And it won't be in a straight line, but I just don't expect it to stop.
Mm-hmm. You good?
My brain is like...
Listen, I'm trying to, you know, fill 4 years and, it's hard. Like, guys, it really takes time. It takes effort. But, like, you know, it's so valuable to understand. Like, it's so valuable to understand. And if not for you, for your kids or for your friends or for, like... You know, this is it's a peaceful revolution. You know, like, if you can print as much money as you want, you can raise tax, you can do all that you want. Like, I don't care, right? Because my wealth is stored over here. My wealth is in this system where I know predictably exactly what this looks like moving forward. Now, maybe I don't know the U.S. dollar price of Bitcoin in the next, you know, 5 years, 10 years. But if history is any guide, 16 years of returns can maybe project forward what we can expect. Mm. But more importantly, like, if I own a fraction of this network, like, you can't take it from me. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, you can do whatever you want outside of the system. I'm sovereign.
Yeah. 225 years of a broken financial system kind of leads you to those places, right?
For sure.
And I'm sure that when Hamilton designed the federal system that we have now, people thought it was crazy and made fun of him. But now we've got something new to explore and learn more about. So
yeah, you're exactly right. I mean, this is you know, I mean, the Federal Reserve was created in the early 1900s, so this is, you know, a century plus in the making. And, you know, everything really kicked off in 1971 when we went off the gold standard. Mm. You know, the dollar used to be a note that was redeemable for gold. So the global economy was growing to where it was inefficient to carry around bars of gold, right? So the central banks, yeah, right. So the central banks were like, well, give us your gold and we'll just give you paper notes on top of it. And you can transact in the paper notes because it's a lot more efficient and we'll hold the gold for you. And trust us, we won't issue more paper than, you know, what the gold
than what we have behind it. Yeah.
And then the Vietnam War came around. right? And Nixon took us off the gold standard in 1971 to fund the Vietnam War. And ever since then, the dollar's been backed by nothing. The dollar is literally backed by nothing except the threat of violence and the view of, you know, power and control, right? And that's why we're $37 trillion in debt. We were $22 trillion in debt 5 years ago. And in 5 years, you know, we'll probably be, you know, north of $40-plus trillion in debt, I'm sure. And then the interest that accompanies that debt, right? And Social Security and Medicare and the military, like, nothing stops this train. Right. Mm. So it's like the sooner you can consider grabbing a seat on a different train, right, the better you're probably going to be looking out over the next, you know, 5, 10, 20 years, you know. So, yeah, it's powerful.
Mm-hmm. Great stuff, Jeff. Thank you. Where can folks go online to learn more about sovereign wealth management?
Yeah, so you can learn more at retiresovereign.com. That's SOVEREIGN. You can give us a shout at our home office, which is located in Augusta. I used to work with a firm here in Lewiston and then branched off in 2023 and started my own practice. But we can be reached at 207-530-9008. And at the end of the day, you know, we're educators. You know, we're not going to push clients one way or the other. You know, we believe, you know, very strongly in what we're doing, but, you know, we want to be educators and that's how we built our practice and how I've built my practice over the last 9 years. So
awesome. Thank you for sharing your knowledge with us.
It's my pleasure. This morning. Thanks for having me.
Next year marks 30 years of Uncle Andy's Digest. What started as a beloved print publication has grown into Lydia Media, a full-service marketing partner helping local businesses thrive. From LA Metro Magazine and the Lydia's Lunch Bunch podcast to social media management, website design, and advertising across all platforms, we've got your marketing needs covered. If you're a business making a difference in our community, let's connect. Lydia Media is here to tell your story and help you grow. Lydia Media, in business, for business. Learn more at lydiamedialLC.com.
We like to close out the show with a segment called Three Random Questions. We're going to lighten the subject matter a little bit.
Sounds great.
All right. Jeff, what is your favorite way to unwind after a busy day?
Probably hanging out at the house with the kids, maybe taking out the boat. You know, we really enjoy spending time out on Great Pond in Belgrade. I play a lot of golf, which is great at the start. I feel like I'm going to have a peaceful, quiet round outside. And then, you know, you get five holes into it and realize it's not going according to plan. So it's not necessarily the best way to, you know, relax.
You're not unwinding.
Not unwinding. Yeah. Yeah. That's right. But yeah, I'd say, you know, just trying to be present in the moment and, you know, controlling what I can control and just, you know, enjoying time.
And your kids are at some great ages right now.
Yeah, 100%. They're a ton of fun. And, you know, my daughter's just, she's so confident and smart and, you know, it's a ton of fun. Yeah, it's a ton of fun.
My questions are always a little weird.
Good. I like it.
Not as crazy today as some days. What's the most annoying color?
Oh boy, I don't know. Most annoying color, maybe red.
You don't like red?
Oh, I'm in the markets, so red is usually
red's bad.
Red's usually not good.
Red like
means
red.
Stop, right? I mean, come on, like, I don't want to slow my energy. I'd say probably red.
Fair. Yeah. Fair enough.
All right. And as we were doing the sports segment of the news, I saw you nodding your head a little bit. Are you a sports fan?
I'm a huge Patriots fan.
Huge Patriots fan.
Yeah,
all right.
Huge Patriots fan.
Jeff, if you could attend any Patriots game from the past, including Super Bowls, and have the best seat in the house, what game would it be and why?
It's got to be the Atlanta Falcons Super Bowl.
Oh, my gosh.
No brainer.
28-3. Like, you know, I could not imagine being there. I mean, I was at my my uncle's watching that place with my dad and my uncle and you know, some family, and it was just like, you know, I get chills and my hair stands up talking about it. You know, you grow up a football fan forever and a Patriots fan, and to see that, the culmination of just how good Tom Brady was for 20 years and to lead that team back from 28-3 and everything that had to go right along the way to get there, the Donta Hightower sack and, you know, the penalties and, you know, the two-point conversions. I mean, you can't tell me that was not fate to, you know, say, like, this is Tom's, you know, Tom's moment. So that would probably be the one. I mean, I'm so grateful for my dad. I love my dad so much, and he's brought me to so many games, and we have so many memories, you know, over the years. And but yeah, that would probably be the one.
It's a great selection. I think the only thing that would have made that game better is if it would have taken place in New England or in Atlanta.
Sure, right? 100%. Yeah.
Just to be in that atmosphere.
Oh man, imagine seeing the Atlanta Stadium just, you know,
oh my gosh, they would have lost their minds.
Yeah.
And now lifelong Patriots fans are complaining about these lean years, and I'm like, you were great for 20 years.
Wow. Yeah, it's hard.
Calm down.
It's hard for people to be like low time preference. It's hard for people to think long term.
Yeah.
Right? Like they're like, oh, no, we need this now. And it's right. Like, no, trust the process. I mean, Drake May is great. You know, we got Mike Vrabel in there now. And
yeah.
Daniel's like, it's a brand new team this year. So yeah.
A lot of rebuilding years for all of the New England sports teams.
It's a weird time to be a New England sports fan. After all that happened with the Bruins and how the Red Sox are mediocre and the Patriots are rebuilding, it's like, well, at least we still have the Celtics and Jason Tatum.
And then Jason Tatum.
Tears his Achilles.
It's like, oh, yeah, okay.
Yeah.
How are the Sea Dogs doing?
Yeah.
You guys got a hockey team around here, right?
Let's watch Worcester.
That's right. Yeah. We got the Nordiques and the Sea Dogs. We're good.
Yeah.
Jeff, thanks so much for your time today. It's been a pleasure.
Yeah, my pleasure as well. Thanks so much for having me.
Knowledgeable.
I really appreciate it.
Thanks to our sponsor, Rupert's Beverage and Redemption, for sponsoring today's episode. And if you'd like to be part of the Lydia's Lunch Bunch advertising family, reach out to Pam Ashby via email at pam@lydiamediallc.com.
Have a great day. And remember, don't bite your cat. And I will say I have bitten my cat.
Investment advisory services are offered through Foundations Investment Advisors, LLC, an SEC-registered investment advisor. The content provided is intended for informational and educational purposes only. The views, statements, and opinions expressed herein are those of the individual speaker and not necessarily those of Foundations and its affiliates. The information contained herein does not constitute an offer to sell any securities or represent an express or implied opinion or endorsement of any specific investment opportunity, offering, or issuer. Any discussion of performance or returns is not indicative of future results. Any discussions of specific strategies are for informational purposes only and have been provided to help determine whether they may be appropriate for your specific situation. If applicable, the primary goal in converting retirement assets into a Roth IRA is to reduce the future tax liability on the distributions you take in retirement or on the distributions of your beneficiaries. Each individual investor's situation is different, and any ideas provided may not be appropriate for your particular circumstances. Comments regarding a particular client's experience may or may not be the same as another client's experience and is not an indication that any client or prospective client will experience the same or a higher level of future success or performance. Foundations only transact business in states where it is properly registered or is excluded or exempted from registration requirements. Registration as an investment advisor is not an endorsement of the firm by securities regulators and does not mean the advisor has achieved a specific level of skill or ability. Nothing herein constitutes a recommendation that any security, portfolio of securities, or investment strategy is suitable for any specific person. No legal or tax advice is provided. Please review your retirement, tax, and legacy planning strategies with a legal/tax professional before transacting or implementing any strategy discussed herein. Any comments regarding safe and secure investments and guaranteed income streams refer only to fixed insurance products. They do not in any way refer to investment advisory products. Rates and guarantees provided by insurance products and annuities are subject to the financial strength of the issuing insurance company, not guaranteed by any bank or the FDIC. This is not endorsed or affiliated with the Social Security Administration, any federal Medicare program, nor any U.S. government agency. If applicable, we do not offer every plan available in your area, and contacting us at the phone numbers provided herein will direct you to a licensed insurance agent. Any information we provide is limited to those plans we do offer in your area. Please contact Medicare.gov or 1-800-MEDICARE to get information on all your options. All rights reserved. This content is intended for informational and educational purposes only. The views, statements, and opinions expressed herein are those of the author, Sovereign Wealth Management, and not necessarily those of Foundations and its affiliates. Crypto and/or crypto-related asset investments are highly volatile and may be regulated. Crypto can be susceptible to cybersecurity and liquidity risks, and its value can also be negatively and materially impacted by regulatory and/or legal developments. It is for investors with a high risk tolerance who can withstand the sudden and potential loss of their entire investment. Prior to investing crypto, investors should fully consider the risks involved and whether it is appropriate for them.